live from the College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences at Michigan State University. It is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's Current Sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a star receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shot fake one time.
We're talking about practice, not a game.
And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cat.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
What's up, beautiful people? Welcome to this March 15th, 2021 edition of WKAR's Current Sports. I, of course, am your host, Al Martin, coming to you on what is a big, big day. Because last night was the NCAA Tournament Selection Show. And folks, Tom Izzo has made it 23 straight NCAA Tournament appearances for the MSU men's basketball squad. Can you believe that? Pretty amazing, right? Because things were much different a little over, 2 weeks ago now. So on today's show, I want to invite a brother who always joins us around this time of the year to talk about the insane in the membrane time that is March Madness. We talk bracketology with basketball aficionado, analyst, expert, Deshaun Tate of Tate's Take Hoops. Deshaun joins me to break it all down. We'll talk about the play-in game for Michigan State. Yes, it is a play-in game against UCLA on Thursday night to earn a right to play in the first round against six-seed BYU. We'll dive into the number one seed that is Michigan and talk about the East region as a whole. We've got some sleepers for you. We've got some great possible second-round matchups for you. We'll even talk about the dust-up between Juwan Howard and Mark Turgeon. All right? So a lot to get to, folks. I really hope you enjoy this Current Sports feature interview with Deshaun Tate.
Selection show yesterday, of course, just minutes after the Big Ten Tournament Championship game to crown Illinois as the Big Ten champions of the tournament, at least, not the regular season, of course, that went to Michigan. I'm curious, man, when you were watching that show last night and you saw each region open up and reveal who was in the field, I just want to start by asking you your top takeaways and surprises, Deshaun.
Yeah, you know what? That's a good question. When you talk about the takeaways, I mean, I was really kind of curious to know, actually, probably like much other people, if Duke was going to end up getting into the tournament, honestly. We know about the positive COVID tests and so forth. And then the story that happened with North Carolina A&T, where they were the number one seed in their conference tournament because of a positive test. And then the following multiple consecutive days of that individual testing after that ended up testing negative every single time. So they didn't even get that opportunity. So that's just a couple of the things that kind of popped out. I mean, obviously for Michigan State being a team that knocked off two of the number one seeds, particularly getting in Wichita State, another one, but for Michigan State, knocking off those teams and the resume that they had and so forth. Granted, they didn't play the best brand of basketball all the time, but there's a few others, but those are some of the ones that stuck out to me. Maybe Louisville not getting in, but Syracuse getting in firmly. I don't know if Mr. Barnhart, who is the athletic director at Kentucky, was trying to, dig at University of Louisville with that one a little bit. I'm not so sure, but at least him being the one that had to break the news, I don't think was all that welcoming and heartfelt for those that are Cards fans.
Yeah, and for Michigan State, let's go there because you know, it was so interesting watching the show as each region began to pop up on the screen and did not reveal the Spartans. You know, there were many. If you check Twitter at the time, there were many Michigan State fans. Spartan Nation was definitely sweating some bullets last night. Tom Izzo, he was asked about whether or not he was a bit nervous or antsy as he was watching the show, and he wasn't. You know, he felt as though his team was going to get in, but to be in a play-in game, Deshaun, there are many that are looking at that and saying, you know, as you just laid out, I mean, you know, beating two of the number one seeds in this tournament, to be in a play-in game is a bit surprising, especially when you play in what many people consider to be the best conference in college basketball. Did they get this right or wrong, the committee?
Honestly, I think that they got it right. And you know what? That's something that if I am Michigan State or Tom Izzo or the players that are playing for him, honestly, that's something that I'd be embracing if I'm just being honest, because, you know, you haven't been in this situation before, but you put yourself in this position to an extent to where you leave it in the hands of the committee. And I know that a lot of people were not feeling all that great about the officiating, particularly in the Maryland game, maybe a couple other ones in the regular season, the Maryland game in the conference tournament for the first round or second round, whatever it was. But even then, putting some of that in the hands of the officiating, again, you have to do your part. In all cases, we can't sit here unless we can stand here as Spartan fans or whomever, whatever, and say they did everything they were supposed to do and controlled their own destiny and so forth. 110% of the time, then, you know, in this situation, I don't think that anybody can say that, you know. So, and more than anything, I think more so than being a play-in team was kind of, especially with the matchup that they got against another 11 seed in UCLA in that first four, I kind of feel like that was kind of built or based around saying, hey, we want to put two predominant programs, at least the program prestige between those two institutions, to try and build the ratings up for the first four a little bit to get more eyes on it. But nonetheless, I expect for it to be a pretty good game, if I'm just being honest. And it's not really about how good or bad UCLA is to me. I think it's more so about what Michigan State team is going to show up. Is it going to be the team that, you know, we've seen against those Maryland games, or the Rutgers or the Minnesota and so forth? Or is it going to be the Michigan State team that knocked off three top five ranked teams at the time? And I guess four of top six ranked teams at the time, if you want to include Duke when they played them early in the season.
You bring up some great points there, Deshaun. One, you know, the possible rating theology there that, okay, if we throw in Michigan State and UCLA, two program names that have a lot of cachet in the college athletics world, some eyes will be on that first four matchup. Then the fact that, you know, I see this to be a bit fitting because, in a way, you know, yeah, Michigan State had a great close on the season, you know, to get in this conversation of making the tournament for Tom Izzo's 23rd straight year. But at the same time, like you just noted, Deshaun, this was such an up and down year. And this is a Michigan State team that you just don't know what you're going to get, you know, for on a game by game basis. That unpredictability has led to the committee saying, well, yeah, we really still don't know. The verdict is still out on Michigan State. Let's put them in a play-in game to see if they can earn their way in and see how far they go. For you, when watching this Michigan State team throughout the season, Deshaun, what are your biggest concerns as they now prep for UCLA on Thursday night?
Well, yeah, the inconsistency, you know, the lack of consistency. I feel like the only thing that I've seen this year that have been consistent from Michigan State is that they have been consistently inconsistent, if that makes any sense. Even the rotations. The rotations has been inconsistent. I'm not even sure that they have like a legit like starting five in place exactly. And I think that's something else that's concerning. I mean, I feel confident and feel really good about what the progress that someone like Marcus Bingham has been able to make, specifically on the defensive end, with him being a guy that I think is getting more confident in his game, being more aggressive in his game. We don't know really who's going to step up for this team. I mean, when you're talking about a guy like Aaron Henry, who is your first option, I don't think he's really a first option or a second option on a team that is contending maybe for a national championship. Final Four is probably a little bit more questionable, but even then, I feel like the consensus would agree. You know, guys like I don't feel like there's really a ton of really pure shooters on this team. Gabe Brown, probably the purest to me. To me personally, the best player overall on this team. Sometimes I think he reminds me a little bit of when Chris Allen was there. Chris Allen being a guy that they wanted to make while he was definitely a pure shooter, that was kind of like his go-to, but he didn't get a chance to kind of showcase that athleticism nearly as much. So, I mean, there's so many different pieces to the puzzle here. The unfortunate thing, I think, that there's just so many guys on this roster who have brought the same things to the table, and nobody has really set themselves apart. You don't really have the point guard. You don't really have anyone up front that, you know, is consistent enough or can bring the production, and you know what you're going to get out of them. But those are definitely just a couple of the concerns. I don't know exactly if Tom Izzo is at a point where he can really rely on anybody knowing exactly what he's going to get night in and night out.
That is so interesting that you, you know, that the point you made about Aaron Henry, because we've seen, especially in those final 2 weeks of the season, we've seen Aaron Henry take his game to another level. But you say, Deshaun, that on a championship contending team, you don't know if he would be the first or second option. And you believe that Gabe Brown is actually the best player on this team. Aaron Henry. So in what you're saying basically is that Aaron Henry has exceeded his own potential in those final 2 weeks to close out the year. So you're not completely sold on him, right?
No. I'm not completely so, if I'm just being honest. I mean, because there's cases with times where I still don't know what I'm going to get out of him. I mean, for him to be the first option, and I mean, can you really be mad if you're Mick Cronin in UCLA when you look over there and preparing for Michigan State, you're getting multiple days to prepare and you say, you know what, if we shut down Aaron Henry, this game is ours. We expect to win if we're able to do that. No, you can't really have sour grapes about that at all. I mean, they should be confident if that happens. And that's something that can happen. You know, so when you start looking at the guys who can maybe carry the team after that, particularly from a scoring standpoint, I'm not really sure that there's many names that you can really bring up. I mean, you bring a lot of guys off the bench and so forth. I don't know if Malik Hall is going to be a starter or not, but he's so inconsistent in a lot of times. And Julius Marble, there we go. Julius Marble. He's been the guy that I really feel like has been the only player this year that I feel like when he checks into the game, he plays with that Spartan pride. He plays aggressive. He plays physical. He gets it. When they start running those war drills and so forth, or have to call a timeout and Tom Izzo has to get the guys in the huddle and yank them up by the uniforms and tell them to go out there and play harder. He's not the guy. He's not talking to Julius Marble. He's talking to the other guys. But we don't know if Julius Marble is going to be the guy that goes in there and has to defend some bigs and gets a chance to put some guys on the block on his hip and turn around and jump hook the way that he did against Duke and so many other teams, or going to be the guy that picks up two fouls in 2 minutes. That's something I don't know. I'm not feeling all that comfortable about. And of course, even in the defense, from a defensive standpoint in the front court, where that is a concern for me, because Joey Hauser's lateral movement, amongst other things, is not really that intimidating. And so you're putting someone like a Aaron Henry at the four spot. We've seen that before. Denzel Valentine had to play defensively at the four before. We saw that from Raymar Morgan. That wasn't his natural position.
Again, Michigan State, UCLA, 9:57 tip time on Thursday in West Lafayette, Indiana. We are talking with Deshaun Tate at Tate's Takes Hoops and multi-level basketball and analyst, a reporter, and we always have Deshaun around this time of the year to talk about bracketology. And this is our first time talking about bracketology since since, unfortunately, 2019. But it's great to get back with it, Deshaun. And I want to ask you, for all of our Spartan fans out there who are still doing research and trying to get acquainted with Michigan State's opponent in UCLA on Thursday night, what can you tell us about the Bruins?
Well, besides the fact that they're entering this game on a four-game losing streak in the Pac-12, which is a conference in basketball this year that's really not all that worth sneezing at, if I'm just being completely honest with you. But besides that fact, they haven't won a game, man, this month in March at all. But when you start looking at some of the players on their team, I think it would be a lot more concerning for Michigan State if the senior and Chris Smith, who only played eight games this year, not expected to play in the NCAA tournament, had returned. Johnny Juzang, who is a sophomore and a transfer from Kentucky, is really good. I mean, listen, they've got about five or six good players that are averaging double digits. And there might be some people who are familiar with the point guard in Tiger Campbell, who Michigan State at one point was recruiting, got a ton of more hair than I do on my head, believe it or not. But I will say enough to say that who he is in terms of penetrating and a distributor, a natural point guard. He can score it a little bit too, maybe not at will, but if needed, he's certainly a good player. But somebody who's going to work extremely, extremely hard is Jamie Juarez. I think that a lot of this is really going to depend in terms of UCLA's success. Hopefully Michigan State can stay in front of some of their bigs. But in terms of their success, you do have guys like a couple juniors in Jalen Hill, who's 6'10", as well as Cody Riley, who's 6'9". If they're able to bring some contribution up front on the offensive end, I think that could be problems for Michigan State. But Mick Cronin has got his team. Listen, they're becoming a more confident bunch. They're going to be a team that I feel like around 365 days from now that could maybe be a Sweet 16 team, maybe, and look impressive in those first two games around this time next year. But they haven't gotten there yet. And Michigan State can be the team to kind of expose that before they started really getting on a run and start to really become a much better team. So we'll see. Listen, it's UCLA. It's Michigan State. You got two heavy hitting programs, prestige rather. And I'm really looking forward to it. I expect this one to be one that Michigan State can win. But I tell you what, Spartan fans, one thing you cannot do is automatically advance Michigan State based off the way that they've been looking this year, just because of the fact that it's March. We can't just automatically advance teams. It doesn't work like that, because this is also a rematch from last year when they played in the Maui Invitational as well. So I know that Mick Cronin is going to be looking for a little bit of get back, the big payback, I guess you could say.
Hey, watch out now, James Brown, right?
Watch out.
Hey, and you know what was so interesting, Deshaun? You brought up the bigs for UCLA, which particularly don't make a huge impact, because they're, you know, UCLA is known to be a small team. You mentioned they're mm-hmm. on that four-game losing streak. They're still maturing. And in many ways, they kind of remind you of Michigan State because of that inconsistency. Right now, Vegas has this thing as really a pick-em. You know, that's how the first four games are anyway. You know, it could go either way. But Michigan State is favored by a point and a half, depending on which sports book you're looking at right now. The winner, of course, will play 6-seed BYU in the first round of the tournament, which will be at 9:40 p.m. Saturday night at Hinkle Fieldhouse in Indianapolis. That is, of course, the home of Butler. Also, the home of where they filmed the final scene of the movie Hoosiers, which is a huge sports film. So that's going to be quite the atmosphere. Whoever it
is, you might be showing your age a little bit, Al Martin, with that Hoosier. You might be telling your age a little bit.
Hey, but you know, if the young sports fans out there have not seen Hoosiers, shame on them, Deshaun. Come on, I don't care what movie, what year that movie was made back in the day. I think that every baller needs to see Hoosiers, right? Am I right or am I right?
Oh, no, you absolutely right. Couldn't have said it better myself.
Exactly, bro. So for you know, looking at this matchup, I just want you to give me a prediction on the spot. Does Michigan State advance, or will we be crying a river on come Friday morning?
Yeah, I think that they advance. I don't think that that's a lock by any means either. But it's really just going to be about which Michigan State team decides to show up. I mean, I think that that's the biggest thing. And in some cases, again, like I said, you don't want to leave this thing in the hands of the officials. But who's going to be officiating? Is Michigan State going to be able to play the physical style that they're used to playing? And I think that that's a huge key piece and element of this whole thing. I mean, listen, I'm there's a name that I completely forgot, and I have to make sure that I mention him for sure, and that's Matty Sissoko, because I love I love what he's been able to bring to the table. But he's going to be a guy that's very key for Michigan State as well, because he can come in, swat some shots away and run hard, occasionally get the ball on the offensive end and get some garbage points, but his energy makes the difference for this team. So while I'm not necessarily going to say that he's the X factor by any stretch of the imagination, that would be more so Aaron Henry, I do want to pinpoint and mention some of the good things that he does as well, because he is a maybe not necessarily your space eater that Derek Nix and some of these other guys were, Nick Wards and so forth, but he definitely will make some guys that are looking forward to penetrating towards the goal think about it a couple times if they try it once or twice. So,
yeah, I really think this is a game in which Michigan State's bigs can really, really feast a bit. You know, you mentioned Matty Sissoko, you mentioned Julius Marble, you know, Marcus Bingham, you know, Malik Hall. All of these guys have a big opportunity here to really take advantage of UCLA down low. And we'll see what happens on Thursday night. Now, I want to transition a bit to Michigan, who is also in the East region. They, of course, are the top seeded team in the East region. And they are awaiting the winner of Mount St. Mary's and Texas Southern. What a year for the Wolverines. What a year for Juwan Howard, despite what happened in the Big Ten tournament. This was a squad that was incredibly impressive. 18-1 start. They did have a 2-3 finish to the season, but they played some really tough opponents. Of course, one of those three losses to go 2-3 to finish out the year happened against Michigan State. But, you know, you look at what's happening with Michigan right now, you know, that 2-3 finish on the year, Deshaun, they're limping a bit into this tournament, especially when you take into consideration, I mean, limping literally, because they don't have livers, right? What is your outlook for this Michigan team right now? Because the loss of livers is massive.
Yeah, I think it just comes down to the more experienced players. Obviously, Mike Smith, who, I mean, the game that he had the other night, I forget who they were playing, but I tell you what, I mean, 18 points. Of like 15 assists, zero turnovers, things like that. He's going to be that catalyst for this team. And I know that Isaiah Livers, Ashondi Brown has to be the guy to step up as well. I mean, listen, he's a transfer from Wake Forest, and he has that size, and he can score it. He can definitely score it. And so I expect for him to be able to step up, especially if they have some a little bit more time and preparation in the event that Isaiah Livers is going to be out. But I mean, yeah, you talked about how impressive Michigan has been. I don't think anybody else could be National Coach of the Year but Juwan Howard. And I don't even just think it's so impressive, just impressive of what he's been able to do, but more so how he's been able to do it. This is a team that was picked to finish sixth within the Big Ten. And so, look, listen, when you start looking at what Juwan Howard has done, he's doing what people thought Penny Hardaway was going to be doing at Memphis. And now we didn't really know when Juwan Howard was coming in. We knew we had a good feeling who he was as a recruiter, but not as much from a clipboard X's and O's standpoint. I think that that's starting to show. Hey, listen, a great staff. That's the difference maker for Michigan as well. He's put together a really, really good staff. So while I don't expect for Michigan to this whole 16 beating the one thing, I know we saw it not too long ago. That's not going to happen again. I think that they do have a little bit more favorable matchup in the following round in the event that they play LSU or the Bonnies. Just don't overlook the Bonnies, and I think you're good there. But they have the experience to beat either one of those teams. LSU would be in a team that I really don't think for Michigan is really disciplined enough. But nonetheless, if they get to the Sweet 16 and end up facing somebody like Florida State, that's where I think that your biggest issue can come from. But certainly Hunter Dickinson being there. The problem with March Madness, when you got somebody who's played as good and looked as good as Hunter Dickinson has, he has never seen this before. He has no idea of having any experience of what comes with March Madness. So I think Juwan Howard knows well enough, who's played in more than enough March Madness games, as to how to prepare this team going forward.
Certainly. And you mentioned Juwan Howard's assistant coaching staff, you know, which includes guys like, you know, Phil Martelli and Howard Eisley. Mm-hmm. Also a big shout out to Saadi Washington.
Saadi.
Exactly. Right. Because, you know, Saadi was an assistant coach on, you know, John Beilein's train. And the fact mm-hmm. that Juwan Howard saw his body of work, Saadi's body of work with Johnny B and said, hey, man, come on and join me over here as well, speaks volumes about his coaching talent, right? How well do you know Saadi Washington at all, you being a Lansing native, Sean?
I can't tell you I know him nearly as well. That's more so of my brothers, my older brothers. Now, I remember watching Saadi Washington. As far as knowing him personally, not nearly as much, but I know enough to know what type of coach that he's going to be going forward. Look, when you start looking at some of these coaches, especially African-American ones, when you're looking at guys like LaVal Jordan over at Butler, and there's another one that I'm missing, but even the gentleman at out there in North Carolina, listen, mm-hmm. This is going to be a really, really good hire. I mean, he's got head coaches on his staff, like future head coaches that could be there right now. I mean, you already mentioned Howard Eisley and Phil Martelli and guys like that. He's got the youthful staff. He's got the elder staff that knows all about March Madness and what that's about. A number one recruiting class coming in next year. I mean, listen, a lot of people are going to have concerns about what they've seen from Michigan down the stretch, but those are teams that Michigan is familiar with, and teams that are familiar with Michigan that they've lost those games against and play. I'm not nearly as concerned when this thing kind of resets all over again and playing non-conference opponents. I think Michigan is going to be just fine, and I think they're all but a lock for my Sweet 16 personally.
Yeah, and you know what? When looking at the East region is so intriguing to Sean because, I mean, you know, for the local basketball fans here in this nation, you know, that either, you know, bleed green or bleed blue, you could see Michigan and Michigan State possibly match up in the Elite Eight if all the stars align. But, you know, for Michigan State and Michigan, I mean, you know, Michigan could possibly get Florida State. That's a possible matchup if they advance. LSU. You know, for Michigan State, you know, if they move forward, a lot of people believe that they will have some good opportunities to beat some teams that seem a bit vulnerable, despite what mm-hmm. that may suggest, you know, like a Butler, a Texas, Alabama as well. How do you see the road for both Michigan and Michigan State when it comes to the probability of advancing far and possibly seeing an Elite Eight matchup? If I had to ask you, Deshaun, to give me a percentage of chance that we will see Spartans, Wolverines in the Elite Eight, what would you give that percentage of chance?
If I max that out, I'd say 20%, and I don't even feel that comfortable. I'm just feeling generous today because you caught me the day after Selection Sunday. But I don't feel nearly as confident of that happening. I think somewhere between 10, 15, 20% of something like that happening. Depending on who you ask, they'd probably say that that's pretty good because this is an East region that is loaded. I mean, listen, everybody's going to say, well, you got Texas sitting there at the Sweet 16 because, you know, I got a good feeling if Michigan State beats UCLA, they'll beat BYU. This is a BYU team that met with the number one team in the country in Gonzaga in the West Coast Conference Tournament Championship game and was up by about 12 points at the half, shot 76% from the field. And I mean, they're obviously a really, really good team. So I wouldn't be overlooking them by any stretch of the imagination. And while you say they can meet up with Texas, and I think that that's where the buck would stop probably for Michigan State. Listen, if you take Gonzaga, and this is just me, if you take Gonzaga, Baylor, and Michigan, who most people feel like are the most dominant teams throughout college basketball all year long, if you tell me all three of those teams are out, and who's your now your dark horse to make it to the Final Four and maybe even win a national championship that has all the pieces, that team for me would be Texas, if I'm just being honest. Now, the problem with that is going into Selection Sunday yesterday, I was asked, who do I feel amongst my best three or best five mid-majors or low majors that could win a game that nobody's talking about, nobody could see? And that team is Abilene Christian. They've made me a nice little decent chunk of change. Don't tell nobody because I don't want my phone ringing off the hook. But they've made me a decent little chunk of change this year. Abilene Christian, a really, really good basketball team. They're located in Texas, too, by the way. But nobody's probably going to pick them. Nobody's talking about them in that 3-14 matchup. But in most cases, you can see them at Texas advancing. And then that's where you do have Michigan State and obviously Alabama there at the bottom, who I'm not really buying into nearly as much because we're talking about basketball, not football. But now, as far as for Michigan, you know, Florida State is one of those teams that I personally feel like is definitely a Final Four caliber type of team. And I'll tell you why for a couple of different reasons. Leonard Hamilton has done just about as good of a job as anybody in the last handful of years getting his guys prepared and ready to play. They've constantly, consistently, persistently been knocking on the door of the suite of the Final Four. They've gotten to the Sweet 16. They've gotten to the Elite Eight. Typically, when those things happen, that door ends up getting pushed down. And you end up getting to where you want to be. It kind of reminds me of Villanova before they won a national championship in 2016. They kept getting there, getting there, getting there, and then they finally did it. They have the athletes to do it. Leonard Hamilton puts players in the league. They've got a lottery pick and Scotty Barnes on their roster as well. And they've got the athleticism. They've got the length. They've got the experience on that team. They've got all these different things, and they're very disciplined. So they're going to be a really tough out as well. The East region probably just as good of a region as any of them. I think it's the most toughest to get through. If you get through that one and you go on to the Final Four, you've earned it.
Guys, I hope our listeners out there are taking notes. I hope you all are taking notes because Deshaun is giving you some gems here that could possibly win you that bracketology pool at the office. Don't tell nobody, but don't forget your bookie. Well, you don't need a bookie now here in Michigan, right? Put some cheese on Abilene Christian because they could be a dark horse that not many people are paying attention to. Some great stuff there, Deshaun.
Don't go anywhere. We've got more with Deshaun Tate of Tate's Take Hoops, where basketball lives, in just a moment. We'll be right back.
Before I move forward, though, I would be remiss if I did not, and I'm sorry I didn't touch on this earlier, but I would be remiss if I did not bring this up because a lot was made of it last week when it happened. Juwan Howard and Mark Turgeon barking at each other a bit on the sidelines. There was a moment, you could see it in the video, where Juwan is yelling something out at his players. And, you know, Turgeon, yeah, he just flips, man. And we found out afterwards that he said, hey, don't talk to me, Juwan. Don't talk to me. And he walks over towards Juwan Howard. Juwan Howard used the word charged at me and not walked over. But and he got tossed out. He got tossed out the game. He was fiery. That South Side of Chicago came out. What do you make of that moment, if anything?
Yeah, you're living in my head rent free because I was just gonna say that Chicago came out of them, but I personally don't make a lot of it. You know, I mean, listen, it's March. Guys are playing for a chance to win a conference tournament championship, especially if you're Michigan. You won this thing outright. You want to show that you're not fool's gold. You've already lost a couple games going into that one as of late. So I don't make a whole lot into it, to be honest with you. I just think, because first of all, it was hard for me to even see where Mark Turgeon was at. I'm not sure if he wanted that smoke because I couldn't find him. I was like, well, I see Juwan charging at somebody, but is it a player or what? I think I may have seen Mark Turgeon over there hiding behind his players. I'm not sure if they was playing Where's Waldo or what, but I will say enough to say that I just don't really make that much of a big deal of it. But I will tell you this much. Juwan Howard's standing up for his players in the event that that's the case. He's standing up for his players, and you got to love and respect the coach who's standing up for his guys and just not going to take crap from anybody. And so while my own personal self likes to see that because he's just fiery, as long as it didn't get into a physical altercation. But some people are going to say that they don't think it's a good look and you're supposed to show, you know, that you're a good influence for the kids and a good role model and all this other type of stuff. And sure, that's great. But also being a good role model is showing that you don't have to just lay down or tuck your tail between your legs and go scurry out the back door or anything like that. There's nothing wrong with standing firmly or on your stance and being there trying to show your team that, hey, what we're not going to do is we're not going to be disrespectful. We can play this thing out and so forth. This isn't a matter of don't talk to me. I heard that someone said something about Juwan's banners hanging up maybe or lack thereof from his time with the Fab Five. And I would imagine that would get anybody fired up probably.
Yeah, and that was rumored. That was floating around Twitter a lot that maybe that had something to do with it, and somebody had made that comment about some kind of banners being talked about. No confirmation there, but a lot of people believe, including I was talking to our guy, listening to our guy Tom Crawford mentioned that you know this thing goes back to Hunter Dickinson, who on New Year's Eve or New Year's Day, one of the two, he was not happy with the way Maryland recruited him. He believed they should have had him harder. So apparently maybe there's a rumor out there that maybe he was barking a bit at Maryland because of that, and that kind of added to the fire. So there's a lot of speculation as to that moment, but I'm totally with you.
Sure.
It is March, and Juwan Howard is a fierce, fierce competitor, and it's part of the reason why Michigan had the kind of season that they had this year. That is a Wolverines team that is taking on the identity of its head coach and a darn good head coach, at least to start here in only his second season, right?
Oh, absolutely, without question. Listen, tempers are going to flare. We're talking about fiery coaches. If I'm Hunter Dickinson, I'm probably it's okay to bark a little bit. Maybe he's unhappy about that, but you kind of got to show him on the court. But I'm not always mad at a little bit of barking, especially when you can just keep it as simple as pointing up at the scoreboard or something like that. But nonetheless, look, I'm not really the biggest Mark Turgeon guy personally. Nothing against him. But I mean, if Juwan Howard has done just as good of a job as anybody around the country, and I think that that's going to show once he is able to add that title under his resume of being the national head coach of the year this year.
How weird is it going to be for you when you sit down on that couch and turn on March Madness and not see Coach John Calipari and Coach K?
A little weird, but you know, nonetheless, it's still basketball. It's still 68 teams in this thing, and if you did something to get in, then it would show, and your number would have been called, and they didn't. So in the end, check this out. Hey, the last time that we didn't see Duke and Kentucky in the NCAA tournament, like you said, 1976, which also happens to be the last time that we saw a team, the Indiana Hoosiers, make a run without a single loss on their record. It's ironic and coincidental enough that Gonzaga is on that list as well. So, I mean, listen, I'm good with it. I get it. Blue blood programs and so forth. I want to say this last little piece. I know you said be brief, but that's impossible. Just ask my mom. Just ask my mom. That's impossible. But I will say this much. I brought Jay Billis on my program a couple days ago and asked him, hey, if we're in a similar position, 300 and God forbid, hopefully we're not, keep your fingers, toes and eyes crossed. But if we're in a similar position around this time, 365 days from now, considering the COVID, I wouldn't call it an excuse, but can we realistically expect some of these same records and performances and so forth, some from the blue blood programs at that point. And he just kind of responded, you know, no, I don't think that, you know, we can say, I don't think that we'll see the exact same thing. So we can't use COVID as an excuse for this thing. And we'll see if they'll get it together around this time next year.
All right. When we come back from this final break, we'll wrap it up as we continue our feature interview with Deshaun Tate of Tate's Take Hoops.
Next question, COVID. That's where I was going next, Deshaun. This is such still a weird time that we're living in. The tournament, every game going to be held out in Indiana. And, you know, they got this bubble thing going on. Teams are going to be at certain hotels. They're going to have the whole floor to themselves, not trying to interact with any other team. You know, not too much, of course, with the general public, because they don't want to risk any kind of COVID outbreak. What do you think the success rate of the NCAA pulling off this bubble for the tournament? What is the success rate you think? Or will we see a few teams have to self-eliminate themselves because of some kind of outbreak?
Yeah, I think it'll be very positive. Will it be perfect? Probably not. We're not living in a perfect world either, and we weren't before the pandemic, honestly. But so I think that there is definitely a good chance that we will see some adjustments that have to be made in utilizing some of those replacement teams. But nonetheless, I think overall it will be a success for sure.
Okay, we'll fire through these last ones here. Most likely upset.
Most likely upset. I think on that one, I'm going to go. I got it right here. If there's anybody that can make a Steph Curry type of or Davidson type of run, I think that that's going to be the Bobcats of Ohio. They've got a kid, Jason Preston, who is the real deal. I expect for his name to be called in June's NBA draft, and I don't think that there's going to be an issue against a shorthanded Virginia team who also struggles to score.
Nice. Hardest region, easiest region?
Hardest region, I want to say, is the East, the Michigan region. And easiest region, I think, is the easiest region is probably going to be Gonzaga. They've got three teams within it that they've already played and beat like a Bob Ross paintbrush earlier this year, that being Virginia, that being Kansas, that being Iowa. But the one that's probably going to be the most difficult for most people, though not me, to figure out is the Midwest region, where Illinois is at the top. I've got the two-seeded Houston Cougars going back to the Final Four.
Hey, shout out to Bob Ross. That's PBS right there. That pays the bills over here, Deshaun. Good stuff there. Good there. All right. Let's see here. Best potential second round matchup.
Ooh, second round matchup. I think on that one will be. I think I'm gonna go with. Let's go North Carolina and Baylor. North Carolina being the 8 seed, tons of size. Baylor, not nearly enough size, but definitely have some 6'3", 6'4", 6'5", guards that are upperclassmen and play much bigger than what you see them listed on that sheet.
Okay. And final one here, Deshaun, and you can take this word however you want to interpret it, but who is the strangest team in this year's tournament? Strange, whatever your definition of strange, when I say strange, you know, whatever first thing comes to mind for you. When you look at this bracket, which team fits that word for you and why?
Strangest, I would probably go with, I'll say Oklahoma State. I'm not exactly sure exactly what Oklahoma State is just yet. They could be a team that could lose in the first round to Liberty as a 13 seed, returning a lot of players from a team that won a tournament game a couple years ago, the last time this thing was played, to get out of the first round. And Oklahoma State, I'm going to tell you who they remind me of. I'm not saying they're as good as this team. I'm not saying they're going to achieve the same things as this team, but they do remind me of that 2003 Syracuse team, where they have one star player and they have a lot of good role players surrounding them, obviously talking about Carmelo Anthony and Cade Cunningham. And on top of that, I'll say enough to say that they are that team that was just kind of floating at that time in 2003. They weren't the top five best team in the country, top 10 and so forth. They were just kind of floating and got really, really hot at the right time. They remind me of that 03 Cubs.
Nice. Yeah. Oklahoma State is I think, dangerous as a four seed in the Midwest. This is awesome, awesome stuff, Deshaun. And again, you can follow him at Tate's Take Hoops. And as you mentioned earlier on, Deshaun, I mean, you've been having some amazing, amazing guests on your platform. You mentioned Jay Billis. You also had, again, I think it depends on, well, let's be real here. The majority of Spartan Nation doesn't like the brother, but he actually cleared on your show, which was pretty cool. But Dan Dockage has also been on the airwaves with you and a host of many, many others. How can people watch your show, listen to it, and follow all of your work, brother?
For sure. Anywhere you find your favorite podcast called Tate's Take. Anywhere you find your favorite podcast, T-A-T-E apostrophe S, T-A-K-E. We stream live on YouTube, stream live on Periscope, stream live on Twitch, as well as on Facebook. Find me on social media at Tate's Take Hoops, TateStakeHoops. We like to call it where basketball lives. I promise you, this is the best, the most entertaining, the most educational, and the most informational basketball content on the planet in the form of a podcast. So if we're talking about international basketball, the collegiate level, high school basketball, AAU circuit, grassroots, ground level, elementary, middle school, if you want to, wheelchair basketball, NBA, whatever it is, we talk about it on my platform. And I want to, speaking of platforms, I want to say this. Thank you so much, Al, man, for allowing me, just sharing this space with me, sharing your platform. I really appreciate it. And you know, I can't leave here without saying, you got to stop ducking me, man. I've been coming up to Michigan, putting all these miles on my car, trying to feed this brother. Trying to feed him. I owe you a steak. Now, what are we talking about now? For the NCAA tournament, maybe 2017, maybe?
Oh, has
for
it been
sure since 2017. It's been about 4 years, man. We made a bet. Mm-hmm. I said Florida was not going to be a Sweet 16 team. You proved me wrong. We bet a steak on it, and I ain't been able to put a steak in your mouth, brother. What's going on, man? Let me know, because next time I come up there, I'm going to be expecting to holler at my boy A.M.
Hey, without a doubt, bro, because, you know, now that things are opening up a bit too, you know, with the whole pandemic here, you know, things are opening up a bit with the restaurants now. I'm looking forward to it, man. And as you mentioned, I mean, you cover it all. And you know what? It's tourney time. This is when we start to have you on a lot. I want to get you on later on this week, not just to give us your thoughts on what has happened in the first four and leading into that first round. But I also, because, dude, part of the reason why I was up so late last night was because I was watching, you know, the final few episodes of Last Chance U Basketball, which
following
the JUCO basketball program of East L.A. College. So compelling on so many different levels. It was the most enjoyable sports doc that I've seen next to The Last Dance. And I even got emotional on episode 8, that finale. And I want to talk to you about that doc. It is so good. And the access that Netflix gets with these Last Chance U docs are so compelling. Well, I want to talk some JUCO basketball and get your thoughts and takeaways on that sports doc later on this week. Have you seen it yet at all?
I haven't seen it. I'm only trying to keep up on the tail end right in the middle of March Madness with 357 Division I programs to try and see who's going to get a ticket punched into the NCAA tournament. But I promise you, you have my word, a little bit different than Al Martin giving me his word. But I promise you, I'm going to give you my word. I'm going to watch it before we come on the air the next time. And I'm looking forward to talking to you about it for sure.
Get ready, man. Get your popcorn ready. It is pretty amazing. But until then, brother, be safe, all right? Thank you so much.
Looking forward to it. Thanks.
Is he fantastic or what? Again, my brother from another, Deshaun Tate of Tate's Take Hoops. Looking forward to getting him back on the show later on this week. But, folks, we are out of time.
we are going to hit you right now with a goodbye, and we'll be back at it on the Tuesday edition of Current Sports as we talk more bracketology, talk more about Tom Izzo and the Spartans. And tonight is the NCAA Women's Basketball Selection Show, and tomorrow we'll talk about where the Michigan State women's basketball team is seeded and who its matchup will be against. All right? So a lot to get to on Tuesday, but until then, we are on a 23-hour break. Be smart, be safe, and as always, be easy, people.